ask him about.
We have changes.
Ready?
Okay.
Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Wednesday, March 3rd will come to order. Monday, we looked at a spreadsheet and possible cuts for this division. And today we have the, okay, you guys get all that, and then we'll go a little bit further. We actually have the bill in committee today, or the draft of, at least of what it will look like.
Shut it.
I can't do everything perfect.
Well, you should be sharp for two.
Well, that's true. That's
true. Anybody wants to come up to the table and comment on it?
Thank you. Did you get a brownie?
Yeah.
I did. I just had another one, too.
Aren't they good?
Yeah.
Full of butter and eggs.
Oh, geez, yeah. I love it.
And sifted flour, so they're smooth.
They are smooth.
Okay. Now I know that everybody. This is the first time you've seen the bill, but I think you all had time to see the spreadsheet. So the bill just reflects the spreadsheet, and I think this might be the first time in my legislative career that I'm carrying a bill that I think is an absolutely awful bill. And so I'm sure some of you agree. I think you've probably seen a bill to this, or a proposal like this, that might be worse than what this bill is. But we're doing our best to mitigate the negativeness of the bill because of all the cuts that are in it. I think we had some information come in, and we might have a change or two to the spreadsheet from the one you saw the other day. And so Mr. Jensen can explain that to you. And then if anybody would like to make comments on the bill itself as to how it affects your area of the budget, we'll be willing to take some testimony. Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the Historical Society, the reduction on, I think it was Monday's spreadsheet, included payments they make on the bond debt that's passed through the society, and also the money they pay to plant management for operating and cleaning the Historical Society. So we changed that number. I think it was $686,000 in the first year, and it's down to $500,000 in the first year now. And the second year, it's a similar change. If you look on page 2, it should be line 78. Senate budget adjustment for the Historical Society has been reduced. And to pay for that change, we raised some more revenue, and that's on page 4, line 151. It's from the Department of Commerce. The licensing technology surcharge had a balance in it, so we're on this spreadsheet increasing those revenues by $250,000 a year.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's the only changes. And again, the target at $22,400,000, we're netting out exactly at $22,400,000.
Okay. I should mention, and then we'll take testimony, that we've been in some discussions with the other budget divisions in the Senate, and I think our target has been bumped up $6 million more, and so the numbers you see here today might not reflect exactly what ends up happening in the final bill. But what we'll do as far as testimony goes is if you would like to say something about the proposal that's in front of us, please comment on the proposal that's in front of us, and then we will take that into consideration, because we may have to actually make some more cuts. So if anybody would like to say anything in regards to the spreadsheet or the bill in front of you, please don't hesitate to come up to the table. Commissioner? Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Chairman, members, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come and to testify to the bill that you have before us, Chairman Tomasoni. Mr. Chairman, I just have to correct your initial statement.
Say your name.
Steve Swigert, Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chairman, I just need to correct your initial statement. In 2002, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I saw you carry a lot of really bad bills, Mr. Chairman.
You maybe didn't like them, but I did.
Better not be the right,
fair enough.
The left lane bill.
Fair enough. Well, at least we're in agreement on maybe the bill before you at this time.
Okay, and good. I'm happy to
Mr.
hear that.
Chairman, members, let me begin by telling you I fully understand, I empathize and sympathize with the very difficult decisions before you. I realize that the decisions probably are between bad and worse rather than good and better. Your job is not easy. It's a very, very painful job, and it will have effects upon people's lives. It will have consequences for a lot of folks, a lot of your constituents in the state. And let me begin by giving you that empathy and that sympathy. I also want to end by giving you a couple of options. Rather than just coming before you and complaining for our stakeholders at the Department of Labor and Industry and the safety of the citizens of Minnesota in regards to what is in the bill, I want to lay out a couple of options. None of which are probably good either. I'm not going to tell you they're good options, but certainly they might be options. Mr. Chairman, Chairman Tomasoni, members, our department, and specifically the unit of CCLD, I had only received the spreadsheet before today, as most persons here did, and I see that your bill will transfer an additional $1 million from CCLD in each of the 2 years of the biennium. That's an additional $1 million in addition to the $1.5 million, actually it's $1.515, that is already transferred from the Department of Labor and Industry from our licensing division to the general fund. Members, CCLD is basically a fee-for-service activity. Senator Sparks is carrying a bill for us right now that is going to try to bring some equity and some order to those fees that we charge our stakeholders in the state. And Senator Sparks, thank you very, very much for doing that. That, by the way, Mr. Chairman, is a really good bill, and that's one that you can support if Senator Sparks would.
It may change slightly before Sparks is done with it. You never know.
But, Mr. Chairman, we are a fee-for-service activity. We collect fees, license fees, permit fees, and for that, we do licensing, we do plan review, we do inspections, and we do enforcement in the state of Minnesota. The bottom line of all those activities and the bottom line of the consequences of the choices before us of transferring another $1 million will be safety or lack of safety of your citizens, of your constituents, in relationship to any activity involving CCLD inspection, enforcement, and licensing. Minnesota and your constituents will be less safe, Mr. Chairman, because we will not be able to inspect, enforce, license the way we ought to at the department. If I could just take a couple of minutes, and Mr. Chairman, I don't want to be so bold as to speak for all our stakeholders. We have a significant number of stakeholders at the department, 108,000 licenses that we actually issue. Those are licenses to plumbers. Those are licenses to electricians. Those are licenses to contractors. Those are licenses to high-pressure pipers. We issue 108,000 licenses, and of course, for that license fee, we inspect and we enforce. That ability of our department to inspect and enforce is going to be severely damaged if we have to transfer another $1 million. Mr. Chairman, this last fall, because of economic activity and because of the transfer of the 1.5 that is already currently permanently in law, we had to make a decision at the department to reduce 13 full-time equivalent individuals. We heard a significant amount of concern from our stakeholders in the reduction of those 13 persons. We have eliminated all training and education, Mr. Chairman. We've had to reduce some inspections. We've had to reduce some enforcement. If we transfer another $1 million per year, Mr. Chairman, we will approximately have to reduce our staff by another 20 full-time equivalents. We are fee-for-service. And if you take the money, if the general fund of the state of Minnesota takes the money from our fees and from our permit, from the plan reviews, the fees for plan reviews, that's just less money that we can inspect with, that's less money we can enforce with. And our stakeholders are expecting that. Your citizens are expecting that that be done by the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chairman, looking at the reduction, it could have the effect of addressing some of the federal stimulus monies that are coming into the state for energy compliance. It certainly will affect the adoption of our next set of codes, our building codes in the state. It will basically cripple the programs that we have for inspection and enforcement. Mr. Chairman, I would like to tell you that we need at CCLD to hold some type. We don't have any surplus, Mr. Chairman. We do have a fund there that we do keep that basically allows us an operating balance. The Management and Budget Office says we should have a three-month operating balance. That operating balance, Mr. Chairman, would be about $6 million. We currently are far below that. Right now, we're sitting at about $4 million, and if, in fact, we get down to the full financial consequence of your bill, we'd be down to $218,000. Our biweekly CCLD payroll is $900,000. So as you can see, Mr. Chairman, we would be in great jeopardy of even just being able to make our payroll each week, much less the other programs that we ought to be providing to the citizens of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple of options which are not good, but which you at least could consider. We think that we are at bare bones right now in relationship to the enforcement programs that we need to run. I think our stakeholders that will come after me will probably tell you the same, that they're expecting more out of the department than we are currently being able to provide, that they're expecting more for their fees than we're currently being able to provide. At least I believe they will say that. And aside, Mr. Chairman, our stakeholders throughout this last summer, and that includes the plumbers, that includes the electricians, that includes the ABCs, that includes the Associated General Contractors, that includes MEA, that includes all of our stakeholders, have basically been made aware of the transfer that we already previously have had to do of that $1.5 million I've spoke about. We're coming together in resolution form to ask that the department be relieved of that transfer of the $1.5 million. To add another $1 million on top of that, I think in a consistency fashion, they are going to be extremely concerned about the consequences of another $1 million transfer. Again, I realize that your decisions are difficult. Mr. Chairman, for each $100,000 that you would transfer, we would need $1 in a license fee increase to be able to maintain our enforcement activities. So if you transfer $900,000 and you raise the fees $9, $1 per 100,000, we would be able to maintain at least the activity we have now. That's an option. Now, I know fees are very sensitive. I've been there. I've been on both sides of the issue of fees, both catching them and throwing them. And I can understand the political nature behind fees. But if we don't have the money, Mr. Chairman, we can't inspect and we can't enforce. We just can't do it. And your citizens expect us to do that. We do have another option. We have a state surcharge permit fees right now are 50 cents on all projects. If you would raise that to about $5 rather than 50 cents, we would probably be able to raise that $1 million that you're looking at. Now, again, that's not a good option either. I understand that. But the fact is that if we don't get the resources in, we can't provide the services that the stakeholders of the state expect us to do and your citizens expect us to do. So, Mr. Chairman, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but your bill would cause us some difficulty of the department. Mr. Chairman, I would hope that you would either look at other options, two bad ones I've laid out to you, or other ways to address the significant deficit before the state.
Commissioner, I don't think you're the bearer of the bad news. I think I'm the bearer of the bad news. You're just telling me what my bad news would how it would happen and what would happen to the people that work there. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, well, first of all, members of the committees, I would just obviously fees raising is very sensitive right now, and I would say particularly in the construction industry, these are some of the people that have been hit hardest by what's going on. It really started in this area, the whole recession that we're in, and I think we have to be very mindful of that, and I would be very comfortable with raising fees on this, particularly in this industry. But also, Commissioner, I'm just wondering, again, looking at housing, this is construction, this is really where we began this recession. And looking forward, you know, that's what we need. We're going to need a lot of that to pull us out. We need a boom in that area, or at least an uptick in that area, substantial uptick to get us moving. And I'm optimistic. I'm seeing that's going to happen in the future. What effect would these cuts have, I guess, going forward? I hear you're saying right now you're bare bones. I can't imagine that there's not a lot of construction going on out there. What happens if we hit what I'm hoping for, you know, a boom in construction?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, we are not seeing that from permit applications yet at this point. But what it would mean going forward is that we would have to really, really, really prioritize what our major goal is, our major mission in the department, and that's probably inspections. We would say to all our licensees, send in your money for your license fee, but you're not going to get any enforcement for that. We're just going to issue a sheet without looking into the license application itself, and we would have to focus towards inspection as opposed to enforcement. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, I apologize, Senator. As we've looked at it at this time, we probably would be looking at 20 full-time equivalents in addition to the 13 that we reduced last fall that our department would have to reduce.
So, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, would that result then in delays?
Oh.
Could it potentially? I mean, what kind of delays might we be talking about?
Certainly delays as far as a time frame and delays. I'd ask the Assistant Commissioner to come forward. And again, members of the committee, which I'm sure you're aware of, we are not talking general fund money here. This is all fee dedicated money, fees for a service. A timeline, Tom?
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Senator, all of our...
Say your name, Tom.
Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. Sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator, all of our programs are based on fees coming in for the service. For example, plan reviews. We do building plan reviews and plumbing plan reviews for schools, hospitals, nursing homes, et cetera. We have 5 staff that do that now. If we were to cut those staff, and we are bound by a law that the legislature has established that we complete those plan reviews in 30 days, we wouldn't be able to meet that 30-day timeline, which could delay construction projects for schools, hospitals, nursing homes. If the legislature passes a bonding bill to add more schools or more buildings for the university, those projects are going to be delayed because we can't do the plan review in time to meet that criteria. Same thing applies to inspections. Same thing would apply to plan reviews. Elevator inspections are 3 weeks out right now. If we laid off half of our elevator inspectors to meet the reduction in services that we need to redo, our elevator inspections could be 6-7 weeks out for inspections.
Would that be true? Time frame would be double for all inspections?
Mr. Chair, Senator, just in talking about the time frames, if we had to lay off, reduce our staff by about 20 people across the board, right now we have about 120 full-time employees. If we had to do that across the board, you're probably talking a double the time frame of inspections and plan reviews to get those out to the public.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Koch, and as you would see, you would end up with a snowballing effect. our time delay then for the plan review delays the construction project from actually taking place and puts more men and women on the bench as opposed to out working, and it snowballs.
Mr. Jacob.
Mr. Chair, committee members, just to add a little bit so you understand what we've done in the last year, year and a half, we've reduced our budget because of the economic downturn in revenue, $2.2 million. We've laid off 13 people. We have contracts with the contract electrical inspectors that we pay them a percentage of the permit fee that comes in. We've reduced all of their contracts, the 90 of them, by 5%. Adding to this is going to reduce all of those activities down to the time delays that we just talked about.
And Senator Olson, go ahead, then I'll make a comment. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess my comment is just this. You know, it was mentioned to me this morning that Tom Stinson apparently has said that as we're looking at what to do to try to deal with the economic downturn and how to stimulate the economy coming back, that these cuts that involve job losses, these are good jobs just like any other jobs that in government, really has a more negative impact on our economy than tax increases do. That's apparently what Mr. Tom Stinson said. And it seems to me like you're here basically saying the same thing, that it's better to have a tax increase in the way of increasing these fees than it is to have the loss of these jobs and the ripple-out effect that we're going to see. But I just want to tell you that, you know, in the parameters that we've been given, we have to not a lot of choices here to make. You're certainly not alone in having to take what's supposed to be dedicated fee-for-service types of revenue and dipping into that to balance the general fund deficit. We're seeing that across the board in the committees that we're seeing from the governor's proposal. And all of those kinds of actions have ripple-out effects, not just on jobs, but on the other kinds of things that get slowed down or that, you know, that hurt other aspects of our economy as possible. Or in other ways. It just seems to me that what you're emphasizing here is that there are government services that are really essential. And when we cut those government services, not only are we cutting those jobs, but we're also hurting our economy in other ways. The fact that we're boxed in here isn't something that we like, but, you know, we have to deal with what we have to deal with, and you're kind of in the same boat as everybody else in that respect, I would say.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I believe what you say certainly has a great deal of wisdom to it. It is correct that you can't provide a service if you don't have the revenues to do it. Senator Olson, I maybe just mention a couple of things here. First of all, these are dedicated fees, you know, that are not supposed to be going to the general fund. And I'll tread on thin ice here, Mr. Chairman, just for a second, and tell you we would much rather take the governor's budget than this bill at DLI. The governor's budget did not transfer any of these monies from the dedicated funds, and I think reduced our department at $16,000 from the general fund. But from DLI standpoint, now I don't know about all the other agencies and all the other parts of the budget, but from the DLI standpoint, this bill before us right now would hit us much harder and our stakeholders and the safety that we provide much harder than the governor's budget.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just that the concept of taking dedicated funds is something that the governor has done in many other areas, and it's not something we agree with or like. So to the extent that we're on the same page there, I guess we agree with that. But licensing fees that are intended to oversee different professions, I mean, the list goes on and on of taking money that's supposed to be dedicated for a particular purpose and then using it to balance the general fund budget because, as you said, you know, we're in the absence of any additional revenue, which you're proposing additional revenue, and whether you call it a fee or a tax, it's I don't know what difference that makes. It's additional revenue. As you said, we can't continue to provide the same level of services unless we're going to figure out how to pay for that.
And I think we're just hearing how difficult this is and what the ramifications are of doing what we're being charged to do here. And I'm glad you made the Mr. Stinson remark because I was going to allude to that also. And it's interesting how this particular testimony is showing us how the loss of jobs actually does have the snowball effect affecting us in many other places. Senator Koch, you have another comment.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your comments. I would just add that, in particular, Senator Olson, I think that construction industry has been exceptionally hard hit, really started this recession that we're in. The industry is still at a 25% unemployment rate. It affects, you know, a lot of other industries, timber, Senator Saxog. We've got, you know, a lot of things affected by this, and we should be particularly sensitive, because I think construction is going to be, you know, something that helps us get out of this as well. When we, you know, we need to see that start going to lead us out. And so I'm just particularly sensitive to this area.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and Senator Koch, I'm sure that there's probably nowhere, no one here who appreciates that anymore. You mentioned Senator Saxog. Well, I'm on one side of his district. Senator Tomassoni's on the other side of his district. The construction industry and the logging industry is very important to all of our districts. And unfortunately, at least I'm not sure what his source was, but my husband told me just this last weekend that he heard on the radio that the expected decline for housing prices by next October is expected to go down like another 6 to 12%. So that's really concerning. It doesn't seem like things are turning around very quickly and that we're going to have a very long road to go to get back there. So I'm not disagreeing with what you say about the significance of the logging industry or the construction industry. I'm simply saying that we're needing revenue to be able to continue to pay for these jobs and these services. And whether we pay for them with a fee or whether we pay for them with a tax, we just don't get something for nothing.
Okay. This is a valuable discussion, members, but what we actually are finding out is that we got a really tough job here and that we can discuss who's right and who's wrong and where to go and what to do, but somewhere along the way we're going to have to make some cuts and people are going to get hurt and it's going to be negative. And so I appreciate the conversation you two have had and the conversation that you've given us and the impact on your particular budget division, Commissioner. Before I call on Senator Metzen, though, what's the assigned risk plan look like?
Mr. Chairman, members, the assigned risk plan has in it today approximately $3 million. The assigned risk plan, of course, is the plan which we use for safety grants in the state and to run our consultation program. It's our OSHA consultation program where we actually go out and work with businesses, work with job places to make sure that they're safe in a partnership that we do with them. Today, right now, $3 million, Mr. Chairman, is there, but as you know, those dollars do have a purpose, and they do have a purpose for worker safety in the state, which has proved very, very positive.
Now, Commissioner, is that the one where we took the money for the mesothelioma study, or is that a different one?
I believe we did. Cindy, did we take? Did you the money for the
mesothelioma?
Mesothelioma study. Did we took that from the assigned risk plan? I think we did because that's workplace safety. I'm pretty sure we did. Mr. Chairman, I don't have.
There were two workers' comp funds that we were looking at, and we thought one was appropriate. The governor thought the other one was appropriate, and so we did the.
I believe, would Mr. Jensen have the answer?
Well, we'll find it out. Okay. We can find it out. Senator Metzen, did you want to comment?
Oh, Senator Olson is right on. I mean, I really sympathize with what we have to do, I guess. What you have to go through, but we're raiding money or taking money from the Metro Cleanup Fund. Take money from the real estate and the land funds. Firefighters are paid. They have a surtax on homeowners' housing that they use for education and training. They're taking $4.2 million out of that fund. And the list goes on and on. We could have people parading behind you, Mr. Speaker, that are going to say the same thing all afternoon. And I just don't know what to do about it. Because we've got our orders. I know you're strictly a fee-based, but some of these other ones are too. So it's not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, I empathize with you tremendously and sympathize. I tried to lay out a couple options, as you know, but Senator Metzen, also from a training and education standpoint, we've had to stop all our training and education for the industry from the department as of last fall. So we don't do any training and education anymore. That was the first fruit to fall from the tree.
Yeah. Have any of these fees not been raised for 20 or 30 years or anything like that? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, you are correct. Many of the fees have not been raised for a significant amount of time. Many of the license fees, I think, go back until 1990, 91, 92. The 50 cent surcharge I was speaking about, that goes back to the
71.
To 71, and has the surcharge has not been increased since 71. But most of the fees probably have not been raised since the early 90s.
Okay. Senator Kielash.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The surcharge is a portion of what I didn't quite understand what the charge was for.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator, the state surcharge is applied to every building permit that's issued in the jurisdictions that enforce our state building code. So if they issue a building permit, a residential permit, a deck permit, mechanical, plumbing, there's a state surcharge. There's a fixed fee. So if your permit is $100 for a deck permit, you pay 50 cents surcharge. If it's higher than that, $1 million, you pay 0.0005 times the valuation, and that's the surcharge for it. So there's a fixed fee on fixed permits, and what we're proposing on this proposal is to take that 50 cent fixed fee charge and up it to $5 and on all the fixed fee permits that come through.
And Senator Metzen makes a good point. None of these funds are for supplementing the general fund.
That's my point.
Now we're searching for cash, and we're having exactly the wrong effect on things that we don't want to have an effect on. But okay, anything further from you gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, not from myself, but I do believe that we do have a number of stakeholders from the department, interest groups that might want to address the same issue.
I'm open to taking testimony from anybody that wants to say something negative about the bill.
And the proponents.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. I represent the plumbers, the union of plumbers, pipe fitters, sprinkler fitters, and gas fitters in the state of Minnesota. And I don't relish the task you have at hand, and I know it's a very difficult task, and I just wanted to bring some perspective from the industry that when a homeowner or a citizen pays a permit fee, they should expect to have a proper inspection. They should be able to sleep at night knowing that the work was done properly and safely. We've seen many times people are being blown up or carbon monoxide because of poor installations, and that could fall back naturally right on the inspections. And without proper enforcement, we could be endangering more citizens in this state. Right now, 10 years ago, when you called for a state plumbing inspection, by law, they didn't have to respond for 72 hours. And that was 10 years ago. Today, if you reduce these members more, it could be a week to respond instead of 3 days. Contractors are either going to lay people off or they're just going to walk off the job and they'll come back in 2-3 weeks. You're going to really harm production schedules at people's homes. People want to get additions done and other things around their house. That's going to delay construction to no end. And the other thing I heard, it was a number put out here about 25% unemployment. We had contacted the Commission of Deed, and the actual number now is 50% unemployment in the construction industry. In 2007, there was approximately 147,000 construction workers active. Today, we're down to 74,000 construction workers active. So if you're going to raise fees on licenses, you're going to ask people that haven't worked for a year, that are on unemployment, losing their homes, now they have to pay more money to hold a license so they can sit home and look out the window. So I know it's a difficult task, but I just wanted to bring up the fact that it looks like there's no good answer to this, but I just wanted to share that perspective from the working industry. Thank you. Any questions?
Any comments, questions?
My name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the contractors. I represent the mechanical contractors, which employ Carl's people, and I also represent the electrical contractors in Minnesota. I just want to make 4 points. I don't see this as a fee. If you're not getting the service for it, it's not a fee. This is a tax. The $1.6 million that's already flowing from this special revenue fund to the general fund is a tax on the construction industry, and another $1 million is going to be an additional tax from my point of view. Number two, Carl mentioned the 50% unemployment. My contractors have laid off half their employees, office staff, people in the field. There isn't the work out there. Back in the 30s, it was called a depression when we were under 30% unemployment. What is it at 50? What's worse than a depression?
Well, and when we saw the budget forecast, one of the main things that was mentioned was the construction industry and the effect that it's having on the negative production in the income tax area, and how people are not working. And are you guys finding that your people have been off so long that they're starting to look for other jobs and starting to get trained to do other work? Has it gotten to that point yet? Because that's what was predicted in the revenue forecast.
Mr. Chair, I didn't read that in the revenue forecast, but that is very true. People have been off for over a year, sometimes close to 2 years, and they take temporary jobs, but now they're thinking, this is never coming back, so I might as well retool and think about going someplace else because they can't use my skills, obviously, in this industry. It's pretty bad in construction right now. My third point, Carl talked about delays. Let me give you a specific example. A lot of times schools, K through 12 schools, want to get stuff done over the summer. So they start in the second or third week in June, and they want to end by the third week in August so they can open up the building again and get the kids back in there. If we can't get the inspections done, they can't open the building. And when you start delaying for, instead of a few days, it turns into a week or 2 weeks, that means the kids, they aren't going to get a certificate of occupancy from their authority, and they aren't going to be able to open that school. That's a real-life example of what could happen from this. My last point is, this last summer I was in the commissioner's office, and there were some people complaining about the lack of enforcement that the Department of Labor and Industry was doing. And as very appropriately, they had a couple of state senators and a couple of state representatives there to help them. Nobody in this room. And they were saying the same thing, that there wasn't enough enforcement at Labor and Industry. And I had the unpleasant task of reminding those people from the legislature that they voted to move some money from Labor and Industry over to the general fund, and maybe that's why we don't have as good enforcement. This will make it worse, Mr. Chair.
Or maybe we weren't raising enough revenues in the general fund in the form of fair taxes that we might want to do in order to not have to move the money over. But I'm not sure exactly what the reason was here. So, okay. Any comments or questions from these witnesses? Okay. Senator Vanderveer?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can't resist. So let me be clear. And I'll just ask maybe the contractors, either one of you, you don't believe, or do you believe, that if we raise taxes or fees in your industry, it will help you have a boom?
Could you rephrase that? I'm not sure okay. I understood.
Would increasing your fees or taxes in your industry cause your industry to do better?
Mr. Chair, Senator, raising the fees in our industry that go to the general fund would harm our industry.
Mr. Chair, why would it do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, because we would be paying more money for less service.
So, but if we raise revenues across the state, somehow that will help the rest of the state get going, or it would hurt the rest of the state?
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator, that's outside my purview.
Well, we're getting a lot of comments here subtly going back to the idea that if we would raise taxes, we could get the economy going again. And I'm a little confused by that because this, again, we're the only state that I know of that believes that, because even the national government reduced taxes. Even Nancy Pelosi and all these people reduced taxes to try and get the economy going. What we're suggesting here is that we need to increase them so that we can help the construction business. Or am I misunderstanding this?
Senator?
I think you're misunderstanding it, but
Senator Keeley. Senator Vandiver, what's going on is we're raiding the funds for the service and the ability to move construction projects along quickly out of the fees they're already paying and giving that money to the general fund. If we weren't so short on the general fund money, those services would be available and help expedite any construction projects that are going on, because the inspections would be on time, the plans would be reviewed on time, we'd have a much more robust economy just based on that. Not necessarily that it's going to create jobs, but when those jobs come, they're going to be on the boards and people are going to be working much quicker, and the inspections will happen much quicker, the schools will open on time, etc. That's what the witness is testifying to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kalish, I thought I heard also that the governor's proposal did not do that. Is that
Senator
did I hear that correctly?
Senator Vandiver, you did hear that, and the governor's proposal did take money from other funds, but it didn't take the money from these funds. So he raided other funds. He just didn't raid these particular ones.
So there are options, Mr. Chair, other than this for this particular problem.
With similar results, though. Okay. Does anybody else want to ask any? Okay. Barry? Thanks, guys. Barry? The band isn't playing to celebrate this bill either, just so you know.
Chisholm days.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Contract Electrical Inspectors Association of Minnesota. And this is the group of inspectors that Commissioner Swiegum was speaking about earlier that do the bulk of the electrical inspections in Minnesota. And I've asked the pages to pass out just a couple of short handouts here. And as Commissioner Swiegum has testified, the contract electrical inspectors have already gotten a 5% reduction in the fees that are available to them as part of the result of the million and a half a year that's already going out of the fund. And we understand that. They don't expect to be held harmless in a time of economic downturn. But their main concern, Mr. Chairman, committee members, is public safety and all the damage, potential damage now and into the future that goes along with that. One of the pieces of handout I'm passing around is a list of all the fire deaths in Minnesota. And you can see, looking at that list, about half of them result from electrical fires of electrical cause. And the other is some pictures of inspections. We have hundreds of these pictures. I've just picked out three or four to pass out. But every time an electrical inspector sees a bad situation, they document it with a picture, write up a citation report, send that into the department for follow-up inspections. But the problem is, because of the shortage of money in this fund, the department doesn't have the money to do the follow-up inspections, to do the enforcement of this law. In matter of fact, in 2009, the department recalled over 11,000 of the electrical permits that are throughout Minnesota that had not been completed. Recalling means they pretty much dismissed them. And many of those were for first time that had never been inspected at all. Many, many more of them were violations that were found that there was no follow-up on. As you might imagine, by not following up on these inspections, you encourage people not to follow the law, not to even apply for the permit. And what that does is you have got the vast majority of the contractors in Minnesota are straight-up, honest, follow-the-law people. But there are people out there who don't apply for their electrical permits.
and they underbid the legitimate operators. If you don't follow up on those permits, then the problem is going to get much, much worse. There's two or three national rating agencies in Minnesota, or in the nation. One is the International Association of Electrical Inspections, which is the most prominent of which. Since the Department of Labor and Industry absorbed and pretty much eliminated the Board of Electricity, which regulated electricians and electrical inspections, when that was done, since at that time, the state of Minnesota had a rating of A for electrical safety. Since that time, as our rating in Minnesota has dropped to a C. And you think, oh, so what? We score poorly. This is one of the ratings that insurance company underwriters use to set the insurance rates for your homeowner's policies, for the fire policy, it's in your schools, your super targets, and that sort of thing. We in Minnesota are already paying a hidden tax because of our electrical safety rating has slipped because the inspections are not occurring. That situation never occurred when we had the state electrical board that was regulating it. The problem with rating this fund is when you buy an electrical inspection permit, say you're for lights in your basement, that might cost $35 or $40. Well, that fee money goes into this fund. When that inspection is done, as your electrician completes the job, and the electrical inspectors do the inspection, they get paid for out of this fund. Your $35 for your basement or whatever it is nothing compared to the $10,000 or $12,000 or $20,000 that is paid by a larger building, because the fees are set per circuit or per type of electrical inspection. Now, those big construction projects will last a couple of years between the time the fee is paid to the department, deposited in this fund, and the subsequent electrical inspections occur all the way through the project. Because when they put when the walls are first put up, they string the wires behind the walls. That has to be inspected before they can put the wallboard on. And then when the outlets are in, the switches are in, all the pumps and air conditioners are hooked up, every step of the way there's inspections done. Every time an inspector goes back out to that site to do an inspection, they pay for it out of this fund. And that's why this fund, one of the reasons this fund has to maintain that balance, because the work is paid for up front when the fee is purchased, and then as the work is performed over the length of the project, the money has to be in the fund to pay for those electrical inspections. I won't take any more of your time. You've heard a bunch already, but this is just one small group of inspectors out there that are primarily concerned. They're concerned with their jobs, yes, but they're also overly concerned with public safety, because this rides heavily on their conscience. This organization has raised $20,000 out of their own pockets to start a public publicity campaign over the summer to stress electrical safety, because they are so scared of what's going on out in the workplace. And I think it's a concern that we all ought to have. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your time. And I know this is a terrible time, and hopefully we can find another way to fix this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Tilley. Anyone else want to comment? Whoever gets up there, go ahead. You all three can sit up there if you want, and then you go one, two, three. Who wants to go first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeanette Blankenship, Minnesota Housing. And I just wanted to confirm, perhaps with Mr. Jensen, what the spreadsheet and bill shows, that the cuts recommended in this aid in the committee are more than the governor's recommendations. I see for cuts for 2010 and 11 that it's $3.458 million, and that a transfer is also done from PARIF for $2.061 million. for a total reduction in 10 and 11 from the agency's budget of $5.519 million. And the governor has recommended $4.664 million reduction. So therefore, it's about $900,000 more that the committee is recommending a reduction larger than the governor. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, yes, with the transfer to the general fund, that is the impact on the general fund, yes.
So, Mr. Chair, we just want to voice our concern that this is larger than we recommend. And if you do want to cut more, that we'd want to be part of the discussion on where it makes sense to take that funding from.
Okay. And where would that be? Where would that be?
I think we need to take a look at some of the other programs and also make sure that it makes sense to come from PARIF, if not rehab loan. Since we're just looking at this today and realizing the transfer was in addition to the cut, at first we thought it was a subset of it, then I'm probably not prepared that we'd do some analysis, and I'd want to let you know by Friday.
Okay. Maybe by Thursday.
Okay.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you,
right.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Who wants to go next?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is John Edmond. I'm Director of Explorer Minnesota Tourism. Appreciate the difficult decisions you have to make here, and every agency is going to feel the impact in one way or the other. And we at Explorer Minnesota Tourism certainly are willing to do our share. I just wanted to point out that the recommendations before you here, because it primarily focuses on carry-forward dollars of Explorer Minnesota Tourism, ends up doubling the operational cut from what the governor had recommended. And the reason is that our carry-forward dollars are dollars that were required by statute to reinvest into marketing. These are dollars that we've saved over the course of the year in order to fluctuate, to deal with the fluctuations of travel inquiries and to invest in a travel season that goes across fiscal years. Those dollars have already been reinvested into advertising and promotion for the state of Minnesota. So those dollars essentially are not there, even though I'm sure that when you're looking at this, you're thinking, let's find every dollar we can. These are dollars that are not being used, but they already have been. And, in fact, some of those carry-forward dollars are not even ours. For instance, it includes a grant to St. Louis County of $100,000 at the time of this spreadsheet or when those dollars are put together was shown on the books, but since then has been reallocated in a grant to St. Louis County. So the effect basically of reducing the carry forward in this budget reduces our operating costs, and we're prepared to do that if that's the wishes of this committee. But I just wanted you to know that these are not dollars that are just sitting there, that the cuts in effect will be a doubling of our operational cuts, which would then therefore impact marketing, potentially impact grants and staff. And up to this point in time, I've been able to protect staff from these from cuts as it stands right now. But, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to make that clarification for you and for the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
If I could mention, in the bill that you have, the carry-forward reduction is not displayed right. So we'll change that for you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I mean, we'll change the way it's displayed, not the dollar amount.
Oh. That would be nice, too.
Okay. Go ahead. Say your name for the record.
Yes, absolutely. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Hancox, and I'm the executive director of the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. And I wanted to take a moment just to change the tone just a tad, because I want to say thank you. I noticed that in the Senate's version of the budget that the Centers for Independent Living are reduced by a lesser amount than in the governor's budget. And I want to thank you, and I want to tell you why. People with disabilities in this revised budget that came out from the governor's office are being affected from a variety of different directions. The Health and Human Services bill cuts personal care attendant hours. It reduces reimbursement rate for providers. It puts people with disabilities on even more extended waiting lists for waivered services at the county level. Education still is not funded on the federal side to the full amount that has been previously promised for students with disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. My point is that individuals with disabilities are feeling the effects of this from a variety of different directions, and the fact that you've taken the step to lessen that impact a little bit, I want to take a moment to applaud. The Centers for Independent Living, as many of you know, there are 8 Centers for Independent Living across the state of Minnesota, and that the centers all provide community-based services for people with disabilities that are really designed to enable individuals with disabilities to live self-directed lives. In the long run, in the long term, the value of these services are that they actually reduce the dependency of individuals with disabilities on other community-based supports. The return on investment offered by Centers for Independent Living, because they do provide these self-directed type supports that are all community-based. For example, at the Metro Center for Independent Living here in the Twin Cities, similar numbers can be seen from other centers, but the number of individuals that we were able to assist to prevent out-of-home placements in 2009, projected savings for the state of Minnesota is over $11 million. Our total state allocation to the Metro Center for Independent Living is $363,000. That's a pretty significant return on your investment, I'm sure you would agree. And as I mentioned, all of these services are really designed to enable individuals with disabilities to live self-directed lives and to be less dependent. So again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I wanted to offer my thank you for lessening the impact a little bit on our behalf.
One good thing in the bill, I guess. Okay, that's good.
Thank you. All right. It's not perfect, but it's not bad.
I wouldn't reduce it at all if I could. Ms. Lee?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President, Executive Director of Children's Hope International, Arner Family Centers, and I'm also a member of the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium. I first wanted to say that as far as the budget, I don't see where we're affected at all because the Asian agencies continually not get funded. So, if people want to be talking about cuts and everything like that, well, we're in a situation where we've still done work and, believe it or not, have been able to work in a shoestring budget for and so forth. However, I did want to raise the issue because I was very impressed by Senator Kielash, who earlier in informational sessions was trying to discover if there were any duplicate funds being looked for from the various or being funded from the different legislative committees on the same issue. I was just in the Agriculture and Veterans Committee where LSS had made a request in addition to the $1 million they received over the biennium for additional funding for a shortfall. And I noticed them again here in the Minnesota Housing, I mean, not Minnesota Housing, under a special appropriations. I also know that they also get funding through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And so the question is, how much of these, some of the same agencies, because last year there were other agencies besides LSS who had come forward, asked for special appropriations in one committee, plus go into a state agency that was going through that committee, asking for funds there and getting it, and then now appearing in multiple other legislative committees doing the same thing, which is kind of like triple dipping. So Senator Kielash had tried to get a rein on some of these different funds that were being asked for doing the same thing. And the testimony that I heard in the Veterans Committee was similar to what you heard or was the presentation here before this committee. And I'm sure it was as far as their issues raised in Human Services where they also get their funding. So maybe there could be some dollars saved if some of this was all consolidated and or more specified. And hopefully, or else be spread more wisely as far as getting more bang for the buck by other agencies. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Anybody else? Okay. We have some more money to find because we've been given a directive to find some more money to cut. So I don't know if the things we just talked about today are going to get worse or if we're going to find a way to alleviate some of the pain, but we're going to be looking around for some more stuff, and we're not going to be passing any bills today and not sending out a final budget yet of cuts until we take a look at some more in-depth areas that we can possibly find some money here. So I don't know if Senator Cohen wants to comment on that or not, but you don't have to. And
quite well.
Okay. And so And then, Cap, we're going to have another hearing this week. Do we have to this week yet, Senator Cohen, or is it?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, and so we're going to try and get it done yet this week, so either tomorrow or Friday, I guess. Do you have a date?
Mr. Chair, members, we don't have the $6 million yet, and so we don't have a date. We're going to try to get it done as soon as we can, preferably tomorrow, if not early on Friday would be the goal.
Okay, so stay tuned, watch the internet or however you get information, and we're going to try and come up with something that works. So thank you all very much. I appreciate all the comments, and meeting adjourned.